This week on the Country Music Media Podcast.
You could argue that he shouldn't be booking new shows because he's supposed to be working on himself. That's cool. But pulling out of a major festival, especially when you're a headliner, I mean, that could really, really have some long-lasting effects and maybe even some legal effects that fans don't comprehend. He committed. If he wants to fulfill a commitment, cool. As an artist, that's important. You need to do that. You could be mad at the festival for not dropping them if you want to, but I'd argue if you're turning to the Kicker Country Stampede to calibrate your moral compass, you have some work to do. Welcome to the Country Music Media Podcast. My name is Billy Dukes, and before we go further, make sure you tap follow on your favorite podcast app to make sure you never miss an episode. Join the conversation on Twitter. You can find me at Billy Dukes, and if you're new to the show, welcome. You can find some archive episodes from Jaron Johnston of the Cadillac 3 from Monday. Pretty fun interview. We talked about the band's ACM nomination. And full disclosure here, yes, it was timed square in the middle of voting season. But Jaron actually agreed to do the pod way back in the fall. We had talked about the band's Tabasco and Sweet Tea album. He told me he was a fan, so we put this together. Promoting them for the ACMs, that was my idea. Most interesting to me from his interview is what he said about songwriters who really don't do a thing during a co-write, but still cash the checks. And then he named the one song that brings him steady money, and it's not the hit I figured it was. Dig a little deeper, you'll find conversations with Jada Watson on redlining in country music and how this affects BIPOC artists. That was a really important conversation, less fun, more fill-up, so to speak. On Monday, it's Angela Stefano from The Boot to talk about her ACM ballot, and we'll both share who we voted for. And then in two Mondays, it's going to be the Q2 stock report. We did that and had a great time with it. Got great feedback about 6 weeks ago, so we'll bring that back first Monday of April. Pretty good week in country music, and I think that's defined these days by no new pandemics, no hard-lined racism, no new controversy, no unexpected death. BJ Thomas did announce he has stage 4 lung cancer. He's 78 years old. He's optimistic. Carly Pearce debuted a new song called Dear Miss Loretta at the Grand Ole Opry, and Loretta Lynn heard it, responded to her on Twitter. Loretta, of course, dropped an album on Friday, and I'll link to this, but I gotta give some love to Angela Stefano, who I just mentioned a moment ago as a guest for Monday. She wrote a really sharp piece about the making of that album without talking to the star, without talking to Loretta. And I think the trap we fall into as journalists is seeking the artist interview and then resting or not writing if we're told no. And this actually happened to me fairly recently with a superstar artist who might be releasing an album this week. But especially in the case of Loretta, who's not really doing many interviews at all, and during her television interviews has not appeared to be a chatterbox full of anecdotes, it might be best to zag, if you will. You know, every outlet that talks to her is going to get some variation of the same content, but if you talk to her daughter and her producer and some others, you might get some new insights and stories, and it still hits. One of the most famous profiles of Frank Sinatra is from Esquire magazine in 1966. It's called Frank Sinatra Has a Cold. And what's remarkable about this is that the journalist, a guy named Gay Talese, never talked to Frank Sinatra. He never got the interview. J.T. Gray, owner of the Station Inn in Nashville, died 1 week after presenting Miranda Lambert with a Grammy Award. Station Inn, if you've never been, is a squat little building amid the high rises in the Gulch area of Nashville. I can't help but fear for its future. And I'm not a preservationist, by any means. But I care about the people who care in this case. I know Vince Gill and Dierks Bentley would be crushed. Kenny Chesney pushed back his 2021 tour a full year, and I'm going to bet that Luke Bryan's going to do the same before too long here. And that might be about it for postponements. And I'm being serious. I think the light at the end of the tunnel is drawing near. Festivals are starting to announce with some emphasis. And at this point, if you're announcing a festival, you're pretty sure it's going to happen. I mean, there's way too much at risk here a second time around. Far fewer variables than we had a year ago. You know how the state and the municipality are going to respond. You got your artists. You got a feel for if people are going to show up or not. Your systems are in place. So We Festival, and is on for August in Minnesota. I think it's pretty likely that the Pepsi Gulf Coast Jam is going to happen in early June. You remember that festival is in Florida. Florida don't care. And then the Kicker Country Stampede doubled down and announced 50 artists on four stages, June 24th through the 26th in Topeka, Kansas. I don't think you can put that genie back in the bottle without going belly up if you're the Country Stampede. 50 artists they booked and announced this past week, including headliners Luke Combs, Riley Green, and Morgan Wallen. That last name caught a little attention for reasons you might expect. Consequence of Sound wrote, Morgan Wallen to headline Bud Light-sponsored Kicker Country Stampede. In their article, they left out a few key details. And I'm picking on them here, but they're certainly not alone. Others presented this story like it was new, like Morgan was out there booking new dates. And while that may be true, that's not true in this case. Morgan's been listed as a headliner for this festival for at least 6 months, probably 18 months. Music Row did a story in September of last year about the festival returning in June, listing these three same headliners. I'd bet that one or all three were headlining or at least scheduled to perform when the 2020 festival was announced in late 2019 before the pandemic. I mean, maybe not, but usually what happens with festivals is the artists get booked long, long in advance, at least 6 months, likely longer. Well before Morgan did his thing on the streets of Nashville. And I just don't think it's fair to ask Morgan to cancel summer shows that were long-standing. I mean, you could argue that he shouldn't be booking new shows because he's supposed to be working on himself. That's cool. But pulling out of a major festival, especially when you're a headliner, I mean, that could really, really have some long-lasting effects and maybe even some legal effects that fans don't comprehend. He committed. If he wants to fulfill a commitment, cool. As an artist, that's important. You need to do that. You could be mad at the festival for not dropping them if you want to, but I'd argue if you're turning to the Kicker Country Stampede to calibrate your moral compass, you have some work to do. The other part of the headline has to do with Bud Light and kind of a soft insinuation that Morgan is promoting beer just months after more or less admitting he has some alcohol problems. You can't expect the guy to never stand in front of a beer sign again, y'all. I mean, beer and liquor sponsors are really important for every festival and bar show. They're not his sponsors. Brantley Gilbert, he's had some alcohol-related troubles. Keith Urban has too. I mean, there's a lot of them in country music that have. They still play the shows and play the festivals. Bud Light signage, Miller Light signage, all over the stages in those shows. This could end up being Morgan Wallen's first show back, by the way. And that would be an insane event. At a festival, middle of America, I think the crowd will be there, and then some. They may just pay to stand in the parking lot and listen. You know, could have kind of a Woodstock environment going on. But I would caution him to remember that doesn't mean anything. If you can't stay humble through all this, there's really no chance. The Consequence of Sound article leads me to thinking about a few other journalism L's from recent. And I think from time to time I'd like to point out these as sort of a learning exercise. Not to humiliate anyone, but to relate. So when you see one, when you see a journalism L or a loss relevant to country music, email it to me, billydukes@gmail.com, or tweet it at me, billydukes, @billydukes on Twitter. One of my own, and it's a biggie, is included on this list. I'm not too proud, but first up is from Pitchfork. And I mentioned this last week, but they used new artist Nate Barnes, an example of continuing country music whiteness. And the problem, of course, being that Nate Barnes, not white. He identifies as biracial and went as far as to show pictures of his mom and dad on social media. So, shout out to Pitchfork, taking that L. Could have happened to any of us. Second one is from popculture.com in an article titled, George Segal, the Goldberg Star, Dead at 87. George did die, sadly. They used a picture of veteran actor Judd Hirsch, who did not die. Finally, it me. We stretched our coverage at Taste of Country a little bit recently to include an update on the husband of pioneer woman Ree Drummond. He broke his neck in a pretty bad car accident. And I wrote the story, listing him as 57 years old. From that story, our video editor wrote and cut a video that's been viewed over 1 million times, except she caught a case of temporary dyslexia, said he was 75 years old. Lad Drummond, as it turns out, only 52 years old. Double L. But listen, these happen. Admit it, put a little note at the bottom, move on. We kept the video up and apologized in a pinned comment. Pitchfork corrected their story properly as well. I'm not sure about pop culture. I never went back and followed up with them. But, I mean, are there really Judd Hirsch stands out there who were just furious about all this? Links to all the stories above at the website, countrymediapodcast.com. I mean, mistakes happen. No need to beat a journalist up over it. Correct it. Move on. By the numbers this week, albums are exactly the same as they have been the last 2 weeks with Morgan Wallen's Dangerous on top. Streaming Find Good Time by Nico Moon at number one, then Starting Over by Chris Stapleton, and The Good Ones by Gabby Barrett. Gabby has the top seller, followed by Nico Moon and Drunk and I Want to Go Home by El King and Miranda Lambert at number three. Black Like Me debuts on the sales chart at number four after Mickey Guyton's Grammy appearance. Most added at Country Radio is Knowing You by Kenny Chesney. Number one country airplay is What's Your Country Song by Thomas Rhett. And the number one hot country song is What's Your Country Song by Thomas Rhett. Thanks to Billboard for the charts, Taste of Country for the job, Jaron from the Cadillac 3 for being a great guest earlier this week. On Twitter, I asked for opinions on the three best Eric Church deep cuts. Working on a thing here, so hit me up, especially if you're a journalist and an Eric Church fan. I want to meet you. Working on a special Eric Church-related episode of this podcast for next month. Follow me on Twitter, at Billy Dukes. Email me, billydukes@gmail.com. And share this episode if you're a fan. And follow on Spotify, Apple, wherever you podcast. And then come back on Monday to go inside the mind of an ACM voter. Should Thomas Rhett repeat for Entertainer of the Year? Or should it be Luke Combs? Or someone else? We'll find out together during episode 46 of the Country Music Media Podcast.